Hey everybody, it's Larry Jacobs here today on April 21st, 2022, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. And please be excused what you're going to hear as the show goes on, my stuffy voice with allergies and the change of seasons. It's driving me nuts today, so bear with me. Please, as we do this, we got a nice show today. Our good friends from CETA, the State Ed Tech Directors Association at CETA.org, helped me set it up with Doug Levin, who's used to be the executive director over at CETA, and now he's national director of what's called K-12-6. We'll talk about that. All right. It's incredible. We've got Bud Hunt from CETA, who is their director of projects and initiatives, and we also have Don Ringelstein from the Maine 207 district in Chicago, Illinois, in Park Ridge, actually, okay, and he's their CTO, so we're going to talk about all the things that go into cybersecurity for a school district today, all right, and the CETA Cybersecurity Collaborative. So we got some great guests to put that all in perspective for you. And I hope you enjoy the show, which we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Our website where we have every podcast we've ever done over there, our magazine, our online journal, which is called Equity and Access. Just click on the cover. You'll be able to see the issue. We got a new issue coming out next week. We're planning on, and it should be a terrific issue, as they always are. I mean that. Okay, so you can plan on that. We'll announce it all during the shows next week. There's a link to seltoday.org, our obviously SEL site all about social emotional learning. It's a great resource center. And our newest thing on teacher retention over at teacher-retention.com, which is this educator shortage is just astounding. And we're really trying to put together a nice group of organizations and companies, et cetera, that can give us solutions to the this challenge that is facing a lot of school districts these days. So bear with us on all that stuff that we're going to do. But today we're going to be talking about cybersecurity. And again, a huge thank you to our friends, especially Doug and Missy over at CETA. .org, the State Ed Tech Directors Association, and I'll go in order here on my sheet. I'll say good morning to Doug Levin first. Hi, Doug. How you doing? It's Larry here. Doug? Doug? Well, let's see. Hold on. Can you hear me, Don?
I can hear you, Larry. How are you today?
Hi, Don. How are you?
Yeah, except for the allergies and all that.
Maybe Doug's got his phone on mute. I don't know. Can you hear me, Bud?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, sir. How are you doing today, Bud Hunt?
Doing great, Larry. Thanks for the time with you today to talk about our cybersecurity work. We appreciate it.
We're going to have a good time. And let me try Doug again. Doug, are you there?
I am. Sorry about that, Larry. You know, it's the allergy fog for myself down here. I'm not as congested, but I'm just as foggy, I promise.
That's okay. I'm glad everything's fine and we're all connected in, et cetera. Hi, guys. How you doing? And, Don, I just have to start with you real quick. You don't happen to know a guy named Ken Wallace, do you?
Yeah, I do actually know a guy.
What's he do for a living?
Ken Wallace. He's the superintendent over here. Oh. So, yeah, I'm familiar with Ken.
Yeah, he was on the show the other day. Okay, we did an AASA show. He was just in Arizona on an AASA conference down there about a lot of stuff that's doing with us learning to 2025, and he was just on with us on Monday, okay? So I told him to tell you how to prepare for this. I guess he didn't.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Let's go down the list here. Doug, tell everybody – before we get into CETA, tell everybody what your organization, and it's K12SIX.org, K12SIX.org. Doug, just tell us about Doug and his organization.
Yeah, sure. No, it's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be working with, you know, Bud and Don. So K12SIX, it stands for the K-12 Security Information Exchange, and we are a relatively new nonprofit dedicated solely to helping protect K-12 schools from emerging cybersecurity risks like ransomware and phishing attacks.
Good. How's it working out? How new are you, and what does it take? What are you doing?
Well, we launched in late 2020. I would say that the cybersecurity issue is a wicked problem, right? And, you know, it's going to defy simple solutions. It's going to require a concerted effort over a long period of time. You know, just like schools have, you know, put a lot of effort into protecting their school communities from physical risks or even from, you know, natural weather incidents and things like that. It's just, it is just a reality in education in 2022 and going forward. We just rely on technology that introduces this risk. We need to work together to help protect ourselves.
There you go. And that was well said again, everybody. K12SIX.org. Cool name, by the way. All right. Bud, tell us what you do. Your title is Director of Projects and Initiatives. Okay. Over at CETA. Okay. Tell us what you do over there and all about CETA.
That's right. Well, CETA, the State EdTech Directors Association, is a group of folks who represent the folks in the IT offices that are supporting specifically EdTech. And it's it's an interesting and diverse group of folks in state departments. It's sort of 1 foot in IT and 1 foot in instruction. I've been there about 90 days, and my role is to support the work that CETA was already doing across a lot of channels and then look for ways to strengthen and create new relationships.
Great. And what was Bud doing before those – on the 91st day prior, what was Bud doing?
My background is school and district ed tech and then library administration. I've been an IT administrator. I've been a school district technology guy. I've been a curriculum guy. So worn a lot of hats and stood across lots of different channels in education.
And was that all in Colorado or where?
Mostly, yes. Yeah, so I came to Colorado for middle school and liked it so much I never really left. So
now
I get to work with folks all over the country, but I study to look at the mountains every day, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's got even more mountains than Illinois, especially Park Ridge. I used to live in Chicago. I used to live in Chicago, and my goal, Don, was to do a line of bumper stickers that said "Ski Arlington Heights," but I never did that. Okay, it's completely flat out there, right?
Yeah, okay. Maybe cross country ski.
Yeah, maybe. Right. Tell us. This is. I love the way Illinois creates school districts. It's a high school district in Park Ridge, Illinois, near O'Hare. Okay, and it's called Maine High School District 207. Okay, and just so everybody knows, Illinois, for reasons that I have yet to figure out, and I lived there for 13 years, and has elementary school and high school districts for some godforsaken reason. Okay, maybe you can explain that, Don, but tell us just real quick about what you do over at Maine 207.
Well, thanks, Larry. And again, it's a pleasure to be here. It's been a pleasure
great
working
to have
with
you.
Bud and Doug and with the CETA effort. I'm also very involved with COSIN, you know, which is the Consortium for School Networking.
I love COSIN. Yep.
Yeah.
Were you at the conference?
Yeah, we have
Did you go to the conference?
I was. Yeah, I was.
Good. I didn't make it. I didn't make it. But they're great. I love them.
Yeah, it was nice to be back in person. That was really great. Anyway, what I do here at Maine Township, I'm the Chief Technology Officer, so I'm really responsible for all the technology in the school district, you know, and that's from, you know, classroom AV systems, cameras, data solutions, our student information system, all of our technology infrastructure and student technology. And so it's a little job, you know, there's really a lot going on.
Thanks. Right, but you are, and I'll put this in 1950s terminology. You're the guy at the school district that owns all the chalk and blackboards. Okay, that's who
that,
you are.
Yeah, that's correct.
You're that guy.
Yeah, and I tell people the technology buck stops here. So
you got it, man. And it's harder than ever to do. And you know, I just want to ask you a question since I brought it up before. You're the high school district. All right. How do you coordinate, if you do, I'm sure you do, with the elementary districts that feed into you and any other districts, the middle school, whatever, how they set it up? How do you guys coordinate that together with technology in Illinois, which is, as I mentioned before, nuts with this? But you may have a different idea of that. Go ahead.
So, well, there's been a history of you know, arranging school districts this way and you know, it's kind of a way, you know, that things have always been done. But in terms of coordination with the elementary district, so we meet pretty regularly. You know, the good thing is that we're all members of the Illinois chapter of COSIN. And in fact, one of the directors in the elementary school district serves on the Illinois board with me. So we've got a pretty close relationship. I think we're trying to close some of the gaps on data sharing, and I think that's really our big opportunity right now. But we are going to get there.
Yeah, it's just wild, and I won't get into that today. It always just cracks me up as I think about it. It creates that situation, but I hope that all works out. And now I want to get into today's show here. CETA has got now a cybersecurity collaborative, which might be one of the initiatives. Bud, is that one of the initiatives you're working on, the cybersecurity collaborative?
It certainly is.
Okay.
It certainly is. I walked into this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yep. Go ahead. But
I guess what I was going to say is that, yeah, I'm still here. What I was going to say is I walked into this project. Yeah, I walked into this project that CETA was just getting started on. I was pleased that our partners, K-12-6 and COSIN, were on board with us. And over the last few months, what I've been doing is standing up, along with my colleague, Jason Bailey here at CETA, this regular meeting group of all of our different members and key partners like Doug and Don, to really explore both what's going on with cybersecurity issues in our districts and states, but also what resources we can unearth to help people solve problems right now, and what problems can we help people recognize are actually problems, because they're not always easy to see.
That's a good point, okay? Sometimes you don't even know the problem's there, and the other guy finds it, and you don't, okay? And I'll just ask you that. What are the problems that are out there? I'm going to stay with Bud on this one. Bud, what are the problems that you've heard they're trying to solve?
Sure. I mean, there's plenty, right? First of all, the specter of cybersecurity is among us, right? Everybody's afraid of getting hacked or getting their privacy stolen or getting their data or private information stolen for the third or fourth or fifth time if you have a credit card or have ever applied for a loan. Children are a rich source of personal data because they're people who aren't necessarily going to run a credit report. But that's one of many problems. And I'm going to pivot to Doug and Don here in a minute because they can talk about more. But the biggest invisible problem that I think there is with cybersecurity right now is that people don't pay attention to it until there's a breach, until there's a security incident, until something scary happens. It's really boring to do IT well from a public perspective, right? Hey, the servers are running today. Hey, nobody's infiltrated the system. Hey, all of our data is secure. So it's not newsworthy to say, hey, we really need to invest in infrastructure to make sure it's boring in the server closet or it's boring in the school district. Doug and Don, you may have some other thoughts on big problems in cybersecurity, because there sure are plenty of them.
And I'm sure. Let me swing it over to Doug. Doug, wait a minute, hold on one second. I want to ask you. You know, you guys have to look at this from a national perspective, if I may. All right, and servers are all over the world, for goodness sakes, we're learning that. All right, and when you look at where I live in Maine and compare that to Kansas and compare that to Colorado, and then you go into Chicago area, okay? Doug, what's the commonality of all this in cybersecurity? Is there a commonality?
Yeah, there really is. It's a great question. And actually, I think we kind of need to think broader even than schools. Really, any organization, any business, any government agency, any school district that relies on technology day to day, both in the classroom but also like for back office operations, right?
Right.
You know, many school districts have transportation and food service, and the physical security systems in schools are managed by technology, right? They rely on technology like they never have before, and that puts them at risk, right? And sometimes the risks come from, quote-unquote, inside the building, you know, largely staff who may make a mistake or students who are bored. It may come from your vendors and suppliers who have issues that affect your ability to serve students. And we do have, external, criminal malicious hackers who are sometimes catching schools up in just a wide net. They don't really know who they're attacking. They don't really care. But in other cases, we're seeing increasing evidence that schools are specifically being targeted. And I will say that, we track publicly disclosed school cybersecurity incidents. And, we've identified incidents in all 50 states, school districts of all sizes and types, right, from the very smallest to the very largest. So it really does not – this is sort of an issue that does not discriminate in some ways by the size or the type of the – of the school or the entity.
Are the bigger districts more well, because they have more money, are they more well protected than a smaller district? Have you found that?
So it depends, right? So essentially there is no minimum standard that school districts are held to with respect to cybersecurity. So like Bud suggested, it's up to sort of local leadership, and hopefully folks are more like what Don is doing and leaning into this before they experience an incident. But, you know, many don't lean into it until after an incident. So but you're right. So larger districts have more resources to protect themselves. But on the flip side, they have more users who might accidentally click something or download something, and they're a bigger target. Right, than smaller districts. So, yes, maybe they're better protected, but they're also maybe a bigger target.
Don, let me ask you, what have you seen from literally from the inside office there? Okay, and I know you're one of the leaders in this. Okay, have you had incidents there, and how do you protect yourself? What have you seen?
So just on a daily basis. Yeah, a daily basis, we have people scanning our systems on a daily basis. I mean, you know, we see it all the time.
Good
now,
people
we're relatively,
are bad. The good guys or bad guys? Is that bad
well,
guys?
That's a good question. Yeah, you can't tell. I mean, there's just people hitting our firewall, hitting our open ports, and, you know, you can't tell what they are, but we get, you know, literally hundreds of those a day. So the bad guys, I would say, are out there.
Wait, I got to ask this because I didn't. You get hundreds of people trying to get, if I may, trying to get into your system every day? Is that what you're? I don't understand that. Help me with that. What are they doing?
You've got to think about it as these aren't necessarily people. They can be bots, too. So, I mean, somebody can set up a scanning tool that will literally hit everything it can find. You know, it'll just start sweeping, you know, ranges of addresses and see what's out there. And really, they're just looking for anything that's interesting. So if these bots find something interesting, they can escalate it to an attacker and get them to start paying a little more attention to it. But really, at the end of the day, they're just looking for interesting things. So, you know, and you know, a configuration that they can exploit. So really, that's all they're looking for. And you know, again, that happens on a daily basis, and I'm sure it happens to everybody. I mean, that's just not a school thing. Now, in terms of, I know of three local districts who've been, you know, attacked with ransomware that's been successful. The first one was as early as 2018. So this has been going on for a while, and the district I mentioned in 2018 literally couldn't operate for 2 weeks due to the attack. So 2 weeks of instructional time lost. You know, if you start getting into payroll issues, you know, and it gets really tough. So these ransomware attacks can really lock up everything that a school does, you know, from, you know, to Doug's point, from back office operations to, you know, what's going on in classrooms. And part of the problem is, too, is these attacks can come from anywhere. So, like, for example, the cameras that we've got in the district could be taken over by malware. I was speaking with an individual at the COSIN conference last week, a cybersecurity expert, who was able to essentially get into, like, connected light bulbs and be able to control them remotely. And a lot of the hardware that they make for it that they can easily access also has microphones in those light bulbs. So they can take control of those microphones to what's going on. Mm-hmm. So
this is unbelievable.
This is, you know, to Doug's point, yeah, bigger
like,
districts
like
have Buck a larger...
It's like Buck Rogers in the 23rd century. This is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, just from... You know, I'm kind of exploring. We have certified ethical hackers that can really help, you know, detect and look for exploits within systems. And, you know, we pay people to do that right now, but I think that's a real opportunity or area for districts is really to start looking at their systems like an attacker would.
Wow. So how much of protecting what you do, and I'll stick with Don on this one. Don, how much protecting what you do falls on you, again, here's a difficult question, versus the vendor, okay? And then you have your teachers who are doing their best to find an app. Oh, kids, you might like this history app, okay? And all of a sudden that turns out to be Vladimir Putin's nephew, okay? And, I'm, you know, how do you handle all that? Who's in charge here? What do you do? What do you ask the vendors? How much are they responsible? It's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
when we enter into a relationship with a vendor, we specify, you know, what they need to do to protect our data, so our students' data, that sort of thing, and that they're taking reasonable safeguards to protect that. And we ask them actually to sign an agreement that's sort of standardized in Illinois. And, you know, other states, Colorado's got them, New Hampshire's got them. And it's increasingly going on in states where we are requiring vendors to take certain measures to protect data and also to certify, you know, by signing agreements that they are doing that. Now, from a CTO standpoint in school, we also get to wear the hat of a chief information security officer. It's not necessarily ideal, but from a CTO standpoint, it's my job to manage cybersecurity, so I look at it, you know, from a management perspective and look at it from sort of a holistic perspective. But it's interesting that you talk about vendors, too, because I can't hire people to do cybersecurity. A, I don't have the payroll unless I lose some other systems. But B, if I hire somebody to do that, you know, they'll work with us for 2 years. I'm going to have to hire them at an entry level. They're going to gain experience, and then they're going to go on to the next thing. So it'll be a revolving door of cybersecurity experts. So what I have to do is think about, okay, how can I support this on a long-term basis? And that usually ends up being a managed service provider that can help us, you know, run a security operations center as a service.
Well, it's amazing. Let me swing back to Doug here. Doug, are incidents going up or down? I mean, we're aware now. You mentioned ransomware, malware, okay, and you monitor this. Are incidents going up or down these days, Doug?
So you're not gonna love this answer because it's hard to know, right? So one of the things that's tricky about this issue, and that we've talked about with, you know, CETA and their collaborative, is public disclosure about these sorts of incidents is pretty varied, right? Yeah. And so, you know, based on what we are seeing from publicly disclosed incidents, ransomware is absolutely a growing issue, and it's probably the most significant issue in terms of its impact.
Yep.
But data breaches are frankly pretty common as well, and targeted phishing attacks against school districts, something we call business email compromise. So, you know, year to year, different types of attacks rise and fall, but the bigger issue is that, you know, based on all of our conversations with practitioners like Don, with vendors and suppliers of school districts, you know, there may be 10 to 20 times more incidents actually happening in schools than are publicly disclosed. So, you know, we kind of don't know what that iceberg looks like underneath the water, but above the water, it is concerning enough that, you know, we're all paying much more attention to this.
That's not good news, because if it's above the water and we can see these challenges, you said it's not going to be good news. You can only imagine what's going on in the basement and then the sub-basement. I mean, it's unbelievable, okay? And Don handles this on a district level, all right? So now let's swing over to Bud. Bud, CETA is the State Ed Tech Directors Association, okay? Talk to me, and you'll know this. How does the state fit into this, the state departments of education? What are they doing to help the districts?
Well, a bunch of things, Larry. As you know, state departments of ed, as well as the relationship between states and school districts, is varied state to state, depending on all sorts of factors, history, politics, you name it. And so some states have really interesting networks that are linking schools and can offer services directly to school districts. They might do that through collaborative purchasing. They might do that through requirements of standards of service. Other states, Colorado's being one, very different in terms of what they would allow the state to do versus the local district. So it's all over the place. In some states, we see a very active and very intense response. In other states, we see a lot of just becoming aware of the problem. And that's tricky. We're seeing federal legislation that's making it an issue, and we're seeing states respond in several different ways across several different states. So at CETA, what we're trying to do is to help discover what isn't getting done and then tell the stories of the people who are figuring out ways to do this stuff. And we're finding some really interesting ones.
Oh, but I'll bet. Actually, can you give an example of just something that you've discovered? Okay, to put you on the spot.
I'd be glad to. Last week, our state meeting, our collaborative meeting, focused on Ray Girdler and his team at the Arkansas Department of Education. And he's done a bunch of things sort of ad hoc because he, like many of his colleagues, said, this is a thing, and we don't have a formal plan of action. So what I would describe, and I'm not sure he would, as a cybersecurity volunteer fire department, an incident response team, sprung up over interested IT folks throughout the state saying, we should pay attention. How are we going to learn? What are we going to explore together? They worked together to sort of wrap their arms around the problem and figure out some entry-level ways to respond. That's given them the opportunity to go back to the state and say, look, here's what's actually happening. We need to explore some ways of thinking about this differently. And it's a great example of our members doing what they usually do, which is they lean into things and say, "This nobody's figured this out yet. Might as well try."
Good old Arkansas, I got to tell you. I was thinking of this question as you were talking. Maybe you answered it. Okay, we have 50 states and territories, okay, Puerto Rico, we have Guam and all that. Of all of them, and I'm going to ask you the good question, which one is the shining star? Who are the two shining stars, Bud, in your opinion? Who are the two shining stars?
That's a hard question, so I'm not going to give you two.
I know what it is, but I didn't ask you
the
worst. I didn't ask you the worst to get you off the hook on that one.
I appreciate
I asked you the best. Who in your opinion is the best? The other 49 would be mad when you say. Who's the best?
The reason why I'm hedging on the answer is that I think it depends on which part of the problem. Doug describes this as a wicked problem, and right? So there's things in Connecticut where they're offering some really great services. Arkansas has some really great legs up on getting people active. I've seen similar efforts in states like Wyoming, and there's great legislative response to privacy in Illinois and California. Like there's just a lot of different ways to answer that question. And because this is such a big issue, we need a lot of those state answers sort of mashed up into a coherent federal response. And it needs to be flexible enough that a local district or a state can respond to the problem they're actually facing. You know, it's worth saying, Don mentioned he's got this concern about hiring folks who will then leave for more money. We have a human infrastructure problem when it comes to cybersecurity most everywhere. We also have a social problem with it too, but they manifest differently in different states. So there's a lot of shining stars, like there often are in educational work, because they're people who got their hands in and are playing with the problem they've been handed and the resources they have access to. And constraint can sometimes be an incredibly helpful focusing tool in terms of getting stuff done.
So I'll stay with you, but I want to ask, is there a chance, maybe you guys do this, is there a guidebook, of this for the state? So
sure.
That literally you take all the best practices, okay? And I agree, every state is different. I mean, New Hampshire is a lot different from Texas, okay? But they can learn from each other, all right? And where's the guidebook? Okay, where's the guidebook? It always reminds me of the line from Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah, but go ahead. Where's the guidebook?
There's a bunch of great resources out there. One of the reasons why we're partnering with COSIN is they've done some incredible work, both in terms of resources and reports, but also certifications and training opportunities, both for people and districts. K-12-6 is providing a lot of that. The federal government's doing it. One of the wicked problems here is that there is a glut of information about cybersecurity in general, but there really needs to be more work done around cybersecurity at the school and district and state level because it's its own beast due to the unique constraints of school systems.
Yeah, it is weird. Doug, who's the shining star? I'll ask you, too.
Well, so what I'll say is there are a handful of states.
You can say Maine 207 in Illinois. You just make Don feel good.
Well, of course, they are.
Yeah.
So there are districts
Nobody picked that up.
So Don hasn't said, but Don has actually a cybersecurity certification. It's quite a rigorous technical certification. There are an increasing number of IT leaders in K-12 who are getting this certification, CISSP.
Yes.
Far too few to meet the need. But I would say at the state level, there are a handful of states where the state has there's state law that is cybersecurity specific with respect to schools. So that includes Texas and New Hampshire and New York. Now, I think that makes a lot of sense, right? This is a shared responsibility between local districts, state government, federal government, and vendors and suppliers. So it's good to see states like those leaning in. I'm not sure I would say that the state laws there are perfect, but this is a long process, and they've begun the process. And we certainly know other state legislatures are also considering cybersecurity-specific legislation, in this session. So we'll see what passes. Like many things in education, though, the real rub is if those new laws and policies come with resources. Telling schools they need to do a better job and not giving them support.
Welcome to education.
That's not as helpful.
Yeah. Well, like I said, welcome to education. You want to hear that same lament in special education.
Right.
Okay, they're all told what to do, and they're not given any money to do it. Okay. Don, if you pass on one thing, the top thing in your mind about cybersecurity to everybody listening, what would be the top thing that they need to do?
So I would say if you haven't done it already, if districts haven't done it already, they need to implement multi-factor authentication. And what that means is that in addition to having a password, which is something you know, the multi-factor also includes something you have, like, you know, our cell phones. We can use Google Authenticator. Microsoft has got an authenticator. It's really, really, that is the most basic thing that needs to be done, A. And B, a lot of cyber insurance companies are requiring that before they'll even offer coverage. So it's critically important to do multi-factor authentication.
Are there any states that aren't doing that? Don, I'll ask you.
I'd say it varies district by district. Most districts are really getting on board with it. There's a lot of districts that are jumping on board as it becomes more and more important to even secure cyber insurance. So that's, you've seen a lot of districts moving toward it right now. So I would say there's a good movement in school districts to get that done.
That's an excellent answer. Bud, what would you say is the top thing that school districts need to do? I mean, you'd agree with that, but what's in your mind the top thing?
Well, I agree with everything that Don and Doug said, but I would say if you aren't thinking about or leaning into this problem or having conversations about it, not in the IT office, but in the leadership offices, in the in professional development offices, that's it. The human factors in cybersecurity are huge. And again, nobody thinks about the security of the network until the security of the network has been grossly compromised, until it blows up in your face. So.
Yeah, why did you just say the professional development area? Are you saying that they really need to teach everybody who works in the school district how to use this stuff and how to be careful? Is that what you mean?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I think that the human interventions, I mean, cybersecurity is a human problem. We get excited about servers and lights and wires and switches and firewalls and appliances and stuff.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's people making choices. Right? And some of those choices are good ones and some of them aren't. And some of them are trying to suss if they're being fooled. It's not much different than media disinformation in general. People need to be very savvy about how they interact with the information that's around them.
Well, good point.
And that's how we make progress.
Wow. And so I want to go back to Don since I brought this up, and I'm going to get to Doug's answer. Don, do we have enough time in the day or enough dollars to do professional development to train our faculty and staff and everybody else on how to do this safely?
I think we've got the basics of it. Like, for example, I use a system whereby I can phish people, so I'd like to do it monthly, where I send phishing emails out to staff and, you know, see who clicks, who doesn't click. There's nothing punitive for staff members that click, but it also gives us an opportunity to, you know, help them better understand, you know, what to look for in an email, what to look for, you know, on a suspicious website or something like that. We're also doing, you know, as, you know, just like everything else, you know, when staff come back in the fall or in August, we try to get some training done with them. So that's something that we have to, I think, mature on in a lot of districts, but there's definitely movement towards that too.
And Don, in your fishing expedition, what if one of them actually is the nephew of a Nigerian prince? Have you thought about that?
You know, the funny thing is nobody clicks on that anymore. The first one that I did in both districts that I've worked at within the last 10 years, you know, we had a ton of failure rates. And in both districts, you know, well, once we've done it a couple of times, you know, our failure rates get down to below 2%. So that's good news.
That's good that we're moving out of the Nigerian prince road. Just tell them you may be related to a Bolivian prince. See if that works. Okay. You know, it's unbelievable. Doug, what's your thought? If you had one thing that you would throw out there, what is it? The best advice? Doug Levin.
I think this is going to be a really difficult issue for school districts to take on district by district, right? There are more things that are similar about school districts in terms of the sort of technologies they run and their capacity. They're facing really the same kinds of threats. I think the points that both, you know, Don and Bud have made about capacity issues are real. So I do think that we need sort of a whole of education sector approach to, you know, helping schools defend themselves against these risks, right? It's just going to be a very, very, very long road if this is left up to individual districts to figure out on their own.
Yeah, that's a great point, okay? You know, there are so many tiny, tiny school districts out there, okay? There's a lot of big ones, but there's a lot of small ones, okay? And there's like 13,000 districts, all right? And to put something like this on their shoulders is tough when they have so much other stuff to worry about, too. And that's why the state, that's why what CETA does is so damn important, okay, to get the word out. And you mentioned them too, Coast, and I can't forget them as well. This was great, guys. We got to go. You're really insightful guys. So tell Ken Wallace I said hello, Don, okay?
I will.
Okay?
I will do that. Okay.
Please, tell him, okay? And you guys were great to have on the show, coincidentally, both the same week. Bud, good luck with the new job. This is fantastic. You're going to do great there.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate the time.
And Doug, you really, this is a cool thing. Again, it's k12six.org. Check that out. It's really cool. So thank you, guys. You have a great day. Okay? Thanks.
You too, Larry.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye-bye. Okay, everybody. CETA.org. They're good. They're very good. All right? Check out what we do at ace-n.org. Okay? Trying to get the information out there. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.